I am the voice of Pacifica Radio.
أنا صوت راديو باسيفيكا على KPFT 90.1 FM في هيوستن.
ونسكيزا 90.1 FM KPFT هيوستن.
يا واد هي باسيفيكا راديو KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy kissing
scene. चलिए आज हम सब मिलकर के इस धरती पे शांति के लिए प्रार्थना करें.
Chúng tôi muốn nói lên sự thật cho giới lãnh đạo được biết. Chúng tôi là Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發，我哋係侯斯頓嘅 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
हम ताकत के सामने भी सच्चाई से बोलते हैं. हम हैं Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
من غير العدالة مش ممكن يوجد السلام.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Next up is some show.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to the most important show on right now on this station, Technology Bites.
Cannot argue with that.
Wow, you just really slammed the HD channel hard with that. Totally no love or respect.
There's an HD channel?
There is, and it's on KPFT.
Actually, you know
the
what?
Next room.
All I have to do is press this button, and instead of Peter, we'll have HD3. So if Peter ever gets really boring, I could just flip this and we can have HD3.
Well, as soon as we cut to the news, just cut it over to HD3. And
yeah, just let it go.
Thanks for that, Pete. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Drew Valves.
You need to show up more regularly, Lee. I want to...
I do my best!
I just want to exclude you. All right.
Who's this guy? He looks vaguely familiar.
I just walked in. Y'all opened the door. I didn't even knock.
We know him from Mars or someplace.
That's
right?
True.
Is that where we know
Mars?
From?
Mars.
He came from Mars.
My favorite Arsian.
He came from
Ars.
Uncle Martin.
My favorite Arsian.
My favorite Arsian.
Uncle Martin.
Ars. He's an Arsian.
Uh-huh. He said Ars.
I guess that would be bad if we were in the UK.
Yeah, I would have the UK Ars. Ars UK.
We have Ars.
Ars UK.
UK. Yeah. Like, congratulations. You're the first person to have thought of that one.
I get it.
I bet he's the first person to talk about it on air.
On this show. Right now. I bet HD's
just
not
consider
this
to be a significant retweet. That's all it is.
I have more followers than you anyway.
That's because you write for a paper. Wait, so do I.
He's for his followers, too.
He does?
I don't know if that's totally
unfounded. Let's do a Twitter follower check on Lee's account and see how many spam bots he's got.
Probably not many.
How many eggs do you have? How many eggs tweet at you?
Very, very few.
That's extra.
How do you do the spam bot check? I'm ready.
Okay,
I'm ready to do it. It says I have 4,802 followers at this exact moment. Well, I look good in that picture. I need to lose weight and look like that picture again. That would be awesome.
All right. TwitterAudit.com.
All right.
Type in your username.
TwitterAudit.com.
Type in your username and password.
What we're doing here is checking to see how many of my Twitter followers
detect as
bots.
Name of your high school.
Okay, audit.
Say aloud.
First pet last four digits of your social.
Make and model of your first vehicle.
Authorize audit. Name your followers your to use your account. Okay,
first pet.
That's all right. I will allow that.
Incoming password from audit check.
Do what now? All right, it's going to tell me. Here we go. Run an audit. I'm auditing
myself.
You're
getting audited.
This is riveting radio.
It's happening. Thanks for using Twitter audit.
So it's not to anger any Scientologists in the crowd. Not that
20%
kind of audit.
Analyzed. 24% analyzed.
Mass consumption.
28. This is going to take a minute or so.
Fill some time. Okay, so,
do something.
Because you have so many followers.
So to help our listeners at home understand, you know, one of the things that people hold up, like Lee did earlier, is the number of followers that they have on Twitter.
It's pretty much a measure of your self-worth.
As a measure of your respectability.
The only people that do that are the people that have a lot of followers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, you know, but people discount a Twitter. Somebody on Twitter says something that you don't agree with, and you go, well, they don't even have a profile pic. It's an egg, and they have like 30 followers or 20 followers, and you go, you don't count. But that, so people, there's actually companies you can buy Twitter followers from.
Yep.
And you can get, like, they just create a whole bunch of fake accounts, and they have them follow your account, so you show that you have thousands and thousands of followers. Also, did you know that there is, if you have enough fake followers follow you, all of a sudden, Twitter doesn't really care for all of that, so people will buy followers for you to get you kicked off of Twitter.
Oh, nice.
What happened to Pope Hat? Pope Hat's mostly, look at yours, 88%.
Yeah, TwitterAudit.com says my followers are 88% human beings.
There you go.
12% not, though. Hey, Flicked, how much would it cost for you to follow me on Twitter?
Don't I already follow you on Twitter?
90%.
Maybe you do. I don't get on
You should ask how much would it cost for me to not unfollow you on Twitter.
Yeah, what's going right for that?
Not as many as I'd like. I need to go buy some more followers.
Touching.
Well.
But I have a blue check, so.
You do have a blue check. I would like. I think we need blue checks here.
Do you have to do DNA for that?
Yes. You have to know a guy.
Send in a stool sample.
You have to know him. You have to know a guy really, really, really well.
He didn't have to do that. He just did that anyway.
You have to not
double proof.
You have to not.
You
didn't
even know
to
that. Get him the check.
That's right. You have to go up in the mountain in a tent.
Yeah.
Never mind.
I can't believe he slapped me with the Twitter follower fish. All right.
The blue check is complicated.
The blue check apparently is complicated. I was disappointed because they got them all at the Chronicle, and even though I write for the Chronicle, I didn't get one.
Would they really?
Yeah, they only did it for the pay, like the full-time staff.
Do you have to pay anything?
No. It's
just you are who you say you are.
It's a verified.
Do you have to
verified account?
Like send them some scanned document.
It depends. So, like, originally it was supposed to be for, like, when celebrities want to have a Twitter account, Twitter would, like, do some vouching and say that, like, yes, this account for Kanye
really
West.
Really is Mike Tyson or
yeah,
Madonna.
It really is Kanye West.
The
or
real
Swift or
whatever, because that's usually what they use. The whatever.
And on those cases, they do generally do, like, a fair amount of verification. But then It started to, they started to expand who they would do verified for. Instead of just celebrities, they would do it for celebrities and also for notable political figures and then notable like media personalities. So like a lot of, I think it started with a lot of news organizations, like big like national news organizations.
Like Anderson Cooper.
It, like those kinds
Tom
of like,
Tom.
Yeah, those kinds
Fake
of
Steve
of
Johnson.
Famous news personalities got their Twitter accounts verified because they were getting to use them as like, you know, a way to talk with listeners and whatever. And then other media organizations, because media organizations are all jealous of each other, got in on the game. And pretty much at this point, if you're a celebrity, you can have Twitter verify your account. If you are any kind of tech journalist at a large enough publication, Twitter will do will offer you verification. And if and there are like a few other things. If you're like a not a celebrity, but a person of note, like Edward Snowden has a verified Twitter account.
As soon as he got on.
Yeah, as soon as he got on.
Do they tell you to like...
Come to the Twitter headquarters office and sign up and say, verify you.
If you're a
fine.
Journalist, do they tell you to like in the middle of one of your articles, insert this random sentence?
No, the way it worked is that Twitter is that my boss contacted like the news media verification people at Twitter and was like, here's the list of people and Twitter accounts. And then like they just applied the
So how did
check.
They trust him?
Who knows, man?
And this is sort of like the SSL search system.
Yeah, it's all basically broken and terrible.
One good root cert and anybody can
do
anything.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, it's all based on trust. Everyone loves everybody. It's all trustworthy. And that's Twitter.
Ars Flictica, I think, is the newest publication to come online. Get some blue checks.
Indeed.
All right, well, you can find us online, blue check or not. At geekradio.com, verified, that is our website, unless somebody hacked it and took it over, which hasn't happened.
Not yet!
In a while.
Hasn't happened a long time, or if ever.
Well, I got some when we were running Joomla or whatever that was, got some stuff injected into it.
Directly. Oh, we had the Turkish...
injected directly into our site?
The PKK, yeah. anti, or the other pro or anti-PKK Turkish hacker thing got in there once.
That's a badge of honor for me. All right. Well, yeah,
Jay just turned up my headphones. What are you trying to do?
Sorry
You're
about
directing
that.
Directing it directly into your brain.
Directly into your brain.
Did. You succeeded. It was, for a moment there, it was
that
injected
would actually be kind of funny. I'll have to think about that. I'll just, like, you know, tweet that thing right when he's going off of one of his rants.
Well,
right
it was
in the
all
middle
staticky,
of something,
too.
It was what?
Like, it was all staticky. I guess the pots are really dirty because it was like...
dirty pot.
Ew.
All right, geekradio.com. We're also on the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And the channel Tech Bytes.
Tech Bytes. Hey, is hexpot.com taken? Because, I mean, I wouldn't use it. But,
Hexpot.
Yeah.
What?
Not available, it says.
Yeah.
Try again.
I mean, it could be registered, but not...
You could do like hexpot.horse or something. .horse is the coolest TLD.
That's only in like Mexico or something.
No, you could get a .horse domain. Seriously. You know, what do you want? Hold on just a second. I'll
What's the
check.
Spelling on that? What are you saying exactly?
.horse. The TLD is .horse.
Yeah, so H, right? Okay.
Yes. .horse.
Just making sure.
That's only in Chicago that it's the other one.
Okay.
Look, I just
Duck horse.
I'm looking
He's prone to doing the gangster accent, so we just had to
Beer and horse.
Well, they don't say it that way. They say it differently.
More gravelly.
We're not going to say that either.
We're not going to say any of that. Hey, techbytes.horse is available. We could buy the domain right now.
I'm sure there are a whole lot of techbytes.stuff.
There are.
Available.
I'm looking at the list, and techbytes.ninja is available. That's kind of cool.
It's funny though. I think somebody actually has techbytes.com.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
But they do. It does warn that the site head contains malware.
Oh, well, that's nice.
I was going
to
buy something.
Go to this other site
that helps our
to get
brand.
It fixed.
I was in a couple of weeks ago. A couple of weeks ago, I was going to buy something.beer.
Afflicted.beer?
But it was kind of expensive. I decided not to.
Techbytes.website is
get a domestic instead.
There was a dot website.
Techbytes.geocities.com is available.
Sweet. Techbytes.technology.
Bytes.technology might be the way to go.
Ooh. What about technologybytes.technology?
Well, I mean, you can have like a subdomain on front of it be whatever you want.
Do they have? Is there a .dog domain?
No. Well, woof. Okay. So, ooh.
Manbytes.dog.
This bytes.technology is unavailable. Bytes.tech is available, but the domain is a premium domain.
Cha-ching.
And it costs the very first one on the list that much for 1 year.
One Bitcoin.
For that, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are specialty.
That is a five-figure price.
So where,
which is
the
ridiculous.
Website you're
looking at here? I'm just on Gandhi.net, which is the registrar I use.
And they, oh, so they, that's the registrar I use.
Yeah.
That's the registrar I use.
That's the registrar I use.
I use them as well.
It's because they're awesome.
So what is geekradio.anything?
I don't know. Bytes.website. Ooh, that's expensive. Jeez, man. All these domains are like, you can get lost just looking
at
cool
technology
domains.
What about technologybytes.sucks?
Oh, no, no. The sucks domains are expensive.
Yeah, they are.
Let's see. What about jlee.io?
Sucks. Oh.
No, wait. No, jlee.horse. Can we buy the jlee.horse domain and, like, put a picture on it of Jay Lee riding a horse? jlee.horse is available. You buy it for $14 for a year.
I regret that I let jlee.com get away from me.
Well, jlee.io is available, as is jlee.club. JLee.online. JLee.cat.
Club.JLee.
JLee.ninja. JLee.website. JLee.vegas. JLee.guru. JLee.photos.
There you go.
Oh, actually, that might be kind of cool.
Somebody better snag that up really quick.
That's cheap.
You know, I the whole thing about
JLee.zone. Be in the JLee zone.
The only thing good about a domain is just, if it's anything other than .com, it starts to slide down the value.
What about JLee.systems? JLee.pub?
How about something .JLee?
JLee.dance.
You can get your own.
Something dot InfoShot.
You can get your own. You can get your own TLD. And I think it's only like $25,000 or something.
JLee.earth.
And you can have.
I thought it was like $100,000.
Oh, is it? Maybe it's more than I thought.
I thought it was more. Yeah.
There's
JLee.ru.
Yes, that website is valid.
Everybody will answer your emails at that one.
Yeah, you get JLee.photography. It's totally cheap.
Yeah, who was going to type that in?
Just like the JLee photography. Totally cheap. Not totally cheap, actually. J takes.
What about JLee.ph?
JLee.xxx is available.
What about J.Lee?
Ooh, I don't think there is a .Lee GTLD.
Is there an LE?
I don't know.
Because you could do J.LE/E.
J.LE. Let's see. Generally, I don't think you can register three. No, I guess you can. I was going to say, I didn't think you could register three-letter domains anymore, but I guess it's two that you can.
Yeah, you can. There just weren't any left. That's okay. The issue. They were all extinct. Well, that might be canon.com now some consultant guy has
it. J.online, J.website, J.vegas. Yeah, there's a ton of these things still available if you want, like, weird, crazy, odd GTLDs.
Ones that nobody can remember and use.
Yeah, exactly. There's J.blue, J.guide.
J.museum.
J.international.
J. wants to move on to other things.
Yeah, we probably should.
J.stop.
J.org.
J.please. J.move on.
Don't speak no filthy pig Latin.
All right. So, yes, IRC. Ooh.
Cuckoo.
What are we talking about?
Cuckoo.
Hiccup. Website. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, New Year.
Happy birthday, Year. You're such a cute little year.
Happy birthday.
Get over here.
Happy checkuary.
Come here.
Happy checkuary, yeah. Although, who writes checks? What's this check you speak of?
I do write checks still.
Do you?
The one guy at the grocery store.
No, I don't. No, I'm not that guy.
He's the coin purse guy. He's like counting out pennies.
Got it in my fanny pack here somewhere.
Wait a minute. Here's a guy. Here's a little candy for you.
Got a hard candy for you.
Let me unwrap it. Hold on.
Where? I didn't get my green stamp.
I want that iron.
Only 200 million more stamps and I get an iron.
You're terrible.
That's the liveliest I've heard Groovehouse be in a while. Oh. This is awesome. Somebody fire him up again. All right. So anyway, welcome to the show. Happy New Year and all that good stuff. We're glad you're here. We did actually, I do need to say thanks. The UnDrive is over.
The lights will be going out.
On stage.
We will be doing the show in the dark.
So long. Farewell.
But we want to thank Jeremiah and Aubrey and Mark and Vitus for going on the web and making some pledges in final hours of the UnDrive.
It's always
that last one a saint?
Appreciate your support.
VYTAS, Saint Vitus. Dance.
Saint Vitus.
All right. So what we're going to do now is go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Happy New Year, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yes, it's 2016 in review. No, we're not doing that. This one just got a few kind of random interesting stories. Gene Roddenberry died in like 1991, but his estate discovered a bunch of floppy disks. In the 60s, he used a typewriter, but then when Star Trek The Next Generation was going and he was writing some stuff for that, he had a computer that was custom built that used 5 1/4 inch floppy. So they found 200 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, that only worked with his computer was the problem. So after he died, his estate discovered the disks, but because they were uniquely created for his computer, they couldn't be read using the ordinary tools. And so apparently now some, 25 years later or so, the IT company retained by Roddenberry Entertainment called Lunatech suggested sending the disks to Drive Savers. They have been working with Drive Savers for over 5 years. According to Bobby Pappas, president and founder of Lunatech, in a statement, he said, quote, "We knew if anyone could get this unique data back, they could." Apparently, it took over 3 months for the Drive Savers team to develop software to read the customized disks, and then it took over a year to process all the information. It's not clear. They haven't said what's on the disks yet. They've just said that they've decoded them, and perhaps there'll be stories or things on there that will inspire the upcoming new Star Trek TV series that'll be on CBS in 2017, supposedly. So should be interesting. It raises that interesting question. You're talking about 1991 in certain ways is not that far back technology wise. And yet it took years for them to get data off of some 5 1/4 inch floppies. So you wonder how long will any format that you're using right now to save your stuff, how well is that going to work? There's one thing to think about when you save your stuff on that unique format that you're the only one that's got. 5 1/4 inch floppies were pretty common back in the 80s, and now they're like difficult. Some of them apparently are very difficult to read. And we were talking about Twitter earlier. Imagine what the trolls can do. Twitter is apparently building a new feature that will allow users to tweet things longer than the traditional 140-character limit. And supposedly they're targeting a launch date toward the end of the first quarter, according to multiple sources familiar with the company's plans. Twitter is currently considering a 10,000-character limit, according to those same sources. That's the same character limit the company uses for its direct messages product, so it's not like a huge surprise. There's no official launch date set in stone. It's also possible that the character limit could fluctuate before it rolls out in the final product, which people inside Twitter refer to as Beyond 140. Recode first reported that Twitter was building a product like this back in September. A Twitter spokesperson declined to comment. I think the thing is, even if they raised it to a 10,000 character limit, what would happen is there's only so much, there's only so many characters that people would use. I don't think that means that every tweet would jump up to jump up to major size like that. I think that one of the things that would be interesting is how it affects sort of the interface. If you're using something like TweetDeck, a longer than 140 character entry would take up your whole column there. So we'll keep an eye on what happens with that and see what happens with it. I don't know whether that would be a good thing for Twitter or not. And then this one's an interesting one. Internet radio, you know, that's been sort of right now streaming audio over the internet is a big thing. But internet radio, like stations that kind of act more like regular radio stations, not terrestrial radio stations that also broadcast on the internet, but ones that are exclusively internet, apparently there's a real risk that they will go extinct in 2016, mainly because of the new performance royalty rates that are out. They were released on December 16th. And the problem is now many small and mid-sized internet-only broadcasters are fearing they'll be put out of business. The deal is they modestly increase the fee that's paid for each song played, but that's not what the problem is. Essentially, since 2009, webcasters that had lower revenues that weren't, you know, making tons of money have been able to pay rates based on the amount of money they were making rather than the number of tracks played and their audience size. Under the Webmaster Settlement Act of 2009, stations with less than $1.25 million in revenue were able to pay a percentage of that in their royalties, ranging from 12 to 14%. So if you made, I don't know, $10,000 a year off your internet radio station, well, so if you paid 14%, you know, that's like $1,500. So you could kind of afford that, or you can scale that up to $100,000 or whatever kind of money you made. That agreement was made between Sound Exchange, which negotiates and collects performance royalties on behalf of copyright owners, and a group of internet radio stations. However, the Webmaster Settlement Act ended on December 31st, 2015, and there is not a new agreement to take its place. So now it turns into where they pay the same as the massive companies, the calculated based upon the number of tracks played multiplied by the number of listeners to each track, which is then multiplied by the rate of 0.0017 per performance. So they give a nice example so that you can understand. So if a station averages 100 listeners at any given time and plays an average of 15 tracks an hour, then it has 1,500 performances an hour, 36,000 per day, 13,140,000 performances a year, which adds up to a royalty of $22,338 a year. You know, to understand how expensive that is, though, consider that if you only have 100 people listening, that is not a giant audience. So if you were able to make $100,000 a year, equivalent to the budget of a small community radio station, the royalty obligation, you know, in the past it would have only been about $12,000. However, you know, now it's going to be $22,000 or whatever. So for very small webcasters with little actual operating revenue, the cost of doing business threatens to greatly outweigh actual income. So what other effect is this? Well, it sounds like Soma. Soma offers 25 commercial-free listener-supported music channels and said that given the current listenership and use at Soma, that their royalty costs would increase by as much as 10 times, going up to about $20,000 a month. He does caution that because the full text of the ruling, the CRB's ruling, is not published, so you don't know what the final numbers will be. Soma is considering some cost-saving measures to limit the number of performances they have to pay for, like implementing two-hour connection limits so that it's more likely that people are listening rather than just, you know, put the thing on and leave it going all day. Apparently, when they started dumping connections after 4 hours, it lowered their usage by 10%. So there's that. And, you know, the problem is, of course, it's going to mean that only the big players can continue to do only the big players will be able to continue to do that, and you know, to broadcast, because the little, you know, funky side ones aren't going to be able to afford it. So it's one of those where it seems like there should be, it seems like that it doesn't, that it would make sense to renegotiate the WSA, but it's not clear that they're ever going to get there. And so we'll keep an eye on what effect that has on internet radio. Even though, I mean, we've got the overlap, you know, the licensing. Basically, I think KPFT pays their licensing, and it covers online and offline, so we don't have to do all those calculations. And then a couple of tech stories, or, you know, especially hackery and security issue stories. The Dan Gooden at Ars Technica is really doing some bang up work on the beat for the security stuff. These two articles I found are both from him. One is a tech support scam that has raised concerns that Dell customer data was breached. Apparently, you know, there's been, for a long time, there's been tech support scams where people, fraudsters, pose as computer technicians, and, you know, call up or contact people to tell them they're working for, you know, where it sounds like they work for a legitimate company. And this one, the new one, they're targeting Dell computer owners, because part of the thing that makes it stand out is that the criminals behind it use personal customer details to trick the people they're talking to into thinking that the calls come from authorized Dell personnel. One person, Ars reader Joseph B., wrote in an email, what made the calls interesting was that they had all the information about my computer, model number, serial number, and notably the last item I had called Dell technical support about. He continued that they knew about my optical drive call from several months prior made me think there was some sort of information breach versus just my computer being compromised, because obviously his local computer isn't going to mention that he contacted Dell a few months ago about his optical drive. Apparently, there are it's not just him. A blog post published Tuesday reported scammers knew of every problem that the author in that blog post had ever called Dell about, and they were not problems he'd ever discussed in a public place. So he had a suspicion that proprietary Dell stuff has been hacked. Dell has not answered. This has been going on for a while. Ars repeatedly asked Dell representatives if they had any reason to suspect that scammers hacked or otherwise breached their security. The representative acknowledged the ongoing scam and pointed to an advisory Dell officials issued in October. But all that does is it requests anyone who receives such a call reported on Dell's website. So it's not clear how they got it, but if you're a Dell owner and you get a call that you think is
right on time.
Pete's been hacked.
Pete, you've been hacked.
We have Dell on line 4.
Dell on line 4.
Dell on line 4.
Just a second.
That was pretty good. Why don't we just do that for the whole show? Just go.
Surprise, you're on the air.
Wait, what?
All right, so we lost Pete. He's probably still talking. I don't know if he can hear us or not.
Poor Pete.
Poor Pete.
Just talking to himself and saying.
Is that because the internet went down?
Did the internet go down?
I wonder.
I don't know.
Are we still online with the radio? Does the radio need the internet?
There goes. No, the radio doesn't need the internet.
I don't understand.
The internet needs the radio.
I don't understand how this magic technology works.
That explains how you got the job at Ars.
Yeah. I'm still puzzling through that one.
All right, well, we lost Pete. We'll see if he comes back, but he's got... Hello?
I think he's calling us.
Oh, there's Pete now.
Why would he be calling?
On the bat phone.
Does he have to call the box?
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's a handshake.
I just dropped the volume, though.
Okay.
I'll
drop the bass.
Are you still... Can you hear him in your master headphones?
I'm back.
Oh, there you are. It's Pete.
That's like the same time every time.
I wonder if there's some job running at the station or something. I don't know, because I just noticed I looked over to I looked over on my screen and where I have the machine controlled from my screen, it was trying to reconnect, so it had lost its connection. And
it's that San Antonio internet you got over there.
Yeah, I'm sure that's it, because the stations is on such high quality wire.
It's solid out here.
Oh yeah.
The rat droppings. Out. The rat droppings really insulate the lines. I think it's on that end, because the connection failed from the server side. I don't know where it cut off. I guess it was the end of the Dell thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the next piece was a lot of people are putting faith in HTTPS lately. You know, that's how you're going to not get your data stolen and all that. Well, apparently, you know, MD5, it used to be for password hashes. People used MD5 to, was part of the encryption. And the idea was it was a one-way hash, so it wouldn't be cracked and it'd be harder to use. Unfortunately, turns out that it is still a part of HTTPS encryption, along with its only slightly stronger SHA-1 cousin. So they're still widely used in the transport layer security protocol that underpins HTTPS. So, okay, well, that's kind of, arbitrary so it's interesting to know, except now researchers have devised a series of attacks that exploit the weaknesses to break or degrade key protections provided not only by HTTPS, but also other encryption protocols, including Internet Protocol Security and Secure Shell. The attacks have been dubbed Sloth. That's clever. Short for security losses from obsolete and truncated transcript hashes. The name is also a not-so-subtle rebuke of the collective laziness of the community that maintains crucial security regimens that form a cornerstone of Internet security. And if the criticism seems harsh, consider this. MD5-based signatures weren't introduced in TLS until version 1.2, which was released in 2008. Which was the same year that researchers exploited weaknesses in MD5 that allowed them to spoof valid certificates for any domain they wanted. Although SHA-1 is considerably more resistant to so-called cryptographic collision attacks, it is also considered to be at least theoretically broken. MD5 signatures were subsequently banned in TLS certificates, but not other key aspects of the protocol. So the biggest thing that, how does this get used? The most practical Sloth attack breaks what's known as TLS-based client authentication. Although it's not widely used, some banks, corporate websites, and other security-conscious organizations rely on it to ensure that an end user is authorized to connect to their website or VPN. So basically, the sad thing is it's not used by a lot of people, but the ones who are using it are the security-conscious ones. So when both the end user and the server support RSA MD5 signatures for client authentication, Sloth makes it possible for an adversary to impersonate the end user as long as the end user first visits and authenticates itself to a site controlled by the attacker. The so-called credentials forwarding attack is carried out by sending carefully crafted messages to both the end user and the legitimate server. And so there's more info on it that you can read about once I post all the links to the website, which should happen probably in the next 10 or 15 minutes, but I haven't done it yet. So Sloth can also be used to cryptographically impersonate servers, but the requirements are steep. The thing is, Moore's Law works just like you've got a more powerful computer today than you did a few years ago, and it's for the same money or less. Something that's already theoretically broken means that in a few years it's going to be easily broken, and there'll be plenty of horsepower to do so. And so leaving it open just because it's not quite all the way broken is kind of sad. The problems with it can undermine protections provided by the Secure Shell protocol and the Internet Key Exchange. This is one that bears watching. This is like kind of core architecture type stuff for the whole internet, and not paying attention to pieces of it that are getting obsolete is not a great sign. It's not a good not a good way to run an internet. And that is the news.
Okay.
So yeah, Google, you know, a lot more sites are going to be going to HTTPS, and Google's kind of pushing that because now they're going to prefer HTTPS websites where every page is secure, you know, supposedly is supposed to be secure, over sites that don't do that. And it used to be that basically, you know, when you put in your credit card info, then that you'd be on HTTPS, but the rest of the sites, you know, the rest of a site would be on just regular HTTP. But now that's going to change. And, so it'd be nice if that was actually secure when you did it.
Well, and it's not just a matter of, and I mean, I can say, Pete, you know this as well as I do, but as someone who has set up websites and who's done HTTPS implementation, it's not just a matter of flipping a switch either. It really does greatly complicate the setup and maintenance of a website to do it securely. If you've got a host who's doing it for you, then no problem. But if you're rolling your own, it makes things a lot more complicated to do it right and to do it well.
Well, and especially, you know, up until relatively recently, and it still takes a lot of configuration, you had to have an individual IP address for each secure certificate. I know that's changed where you can do, I guess, port forwarding, so you can have multiples on one IP, but that's apparently a real pain in the neck, because I've tried to do some of that on a couple sites, and it's been a real pain.
Yeah. I mean, there's things you can do. You can use SNI, you can use wildcard certs. This is a pretty deep rabbit hole to go down into. But yeah, I mean, the point is, the shift to HTTPS is not just an automatic panacea. You have to do it correctly. And as these kind of attacks show, the temptation to just flip the switch and hit the go button with a default configuration can be great and can also lead to huge harm, because a lot of times default configurations for HTTPS web servers, Apache and Nginx, a lot of the default configurations have outdated, old, and broken cipher suites included by default. And that's a bad thing.
Yeah, and so, you know, that one, part of why I wanted to mention that one, or make sure and bring it up, is, you know, the geekier among us, regular folks rely on the people running the servers and the people who know a little bit more about the tech to know whether things are secure or not. And so we've pounded into people's heads, you know, oh, if the little lock, if the HTTPS is working, you know you're secure. And then to have that be known that it's not really, first off, that needs to be widely disseminated so that people know about it. And so there's some pressure to do something about it. But second, you know, it means people need to understand that these kinds of you can't just go by rote. Security, unfortunately, takes a little bit more of a commitment than that. And you can't just, you can't just count on that HTTPS is meaning that you're safe and sound and that everything that's being asked for is legit and secure.
Can't help but notice that geekradio.com does not give me a security exception warning if I go HTTPS.
We don't collect anybody's personal data, which is why we haven't bothered to put up a cert.
No, there is a cert for some reason.
Oh, there's probably there's the global one for the shared IP.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. It's a global cert.
And
it's like,
so,
no wonder, that's weird.
Yeah, well, it's on a shared server, and it's on a shared IP on a shared well, by shared server I mean it just means there are multiple websites on the same box. It's not like GoDaddy or something where there's 1,200 sites on some.
But the TechByte site shows up on the HTTPS one?
No, well, if you go to HTTPS geekradio.com,
it says probably says the cert doesn't match, and if you go ahead, you do get to Geek Radio.
I was going to say that'll tell you which one the primary site is on the server.
Yeah, it's a shared hosting. It's a big long shared hosting thing, and it also looks like it's self signed, which is kind of funky. I don't know why they would do that. Whatever, not my problem.
Well, and again, you know, we don't have nobody really other than the only place. nobody's giving any personal information on our website is part of why. You know, there's
not on purpose
giving us money. Yeah, we've had it out there for all that time, and nobody's giving us any money over it.
But,
or,
now, but
you know,
now there's the new cert, free cert authority. They're already the fifth largest CA.
Encrypt this. Let's encrypt.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
They're already the fifth largest, is what I read today.
Yeah, they make it relatively easy to set up an SSL certificate on your web server.
But you have to run a Perl script or something, or auto-renew by hand, because their service only lasts like 60 days or 90 days or something.
Yeah, they make it relatively easy to set it up also if you have a relatively simple website setup. If you've got any kind of reverse proxy, if you're doing anything that's not just bog standard, it gets a lot more complicated, and you're better off doing your own certificates. But if you're at that point, you probably already have your own certificates anyway, so it's not really a big deal.
Like our website.
Yeah. Like my website, for example.
Although, as far as being just like a good netizen, you kind of want your certs to be valid so you don't get people in the habit of just clicking past those, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it leads to, you know, everybody has seen, because of misconfigured websites or whatever, everybody's seen the warning you get. You know, when you go to a website and it's like, warning, this site identifies itself as something else. It's not the right thing. Click here if you really want to continue, but you shouldn't. And, you know, you see it so often, you just get blind to it. Click right through it anyway.
See a lot of it works pages from Apache.
Yeah. Yes. Those nice default pages.
Well, it's also a pain if you, are doing, say, a development version of a site that you're working on that's going to be, you know, fully secured and so on, but it's not really worth paying for a SSL cert for the development instance of a bot, of something that's not going to really get real customer data until it is a production thing. So that kind of bites.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, for your dev stuff, you should, you know, self-sign.
You can do self-sign cert
for
on
dev
that.
Dev is easy.
And then, really, certs are pretty cheap now. You can get a cert for, like, under $20 a year.
You get them for free.
Gandhi. Yeah, or get them for free, like you mentioned
before. Get them for free. Go to Start SSL. They're one that – or yeah, Start SSL is one that does free ones. I've stuck with them for years and years. They're really good. Gandhi does cheap ones, I think. Let's Encrypt is free. There's all kinds of options. If you are a website operator, there's really no excuse for your public website at this point to not – offer HTTPS. If you are not a website operator, but a frequent website user, as I'm sure most of our listeners are, you should definitely pay attention to the sites that you're going to and see the ones that do and do not offer HTTPS. And the ones that don't, you should bug them to offer it. Now, a lot of times, the fact that a website offers HTTPS isn't really going to help you. It's not going to, like, make your browsing better or, you know, really even make you any more secure, because someone who is, you know, an outside agency, be it an advertising agency or a government agency or whatever, that's, you know, monitoring your web traffic, they can still see where you're going, not necessarily exactly what traffic you're passing.
Some creeper in a coffee shop isn't going to see what your traffic is.
No, that's exactly right.
Not unless he's running a bicycle or something like that.
Yeah, sheep bleed or whatever that old one was.
Oh, no, bicycle just came out a couple days ago.
Oh, wow.
So you can actually, replay old SSL traffic or current SSL traffic, and then be able to get certain bits of information out of it. Like, some of the easy low-hanging fruit is to be able to tell how long the person's password is.
That's scary.
Because if you know the length, brute forcing gets a lot easier. Mm-hmm. So it just came out a couple days ago. Pretty much everything's broken is the point.
You just throw away your computer's living
case. Doesn't everybody lie everything about the length of their broken password?
I think so. I heard 6 characters is kind of the average.
No.
But I don't know.
8 characters. 12 characters.
So we're introducing the new super secure sneaker net.
It's this new thing on custom coded 5 1/4 floppy disks that we're going to have on a computer that
using Star Trek technology behind it.
20 years to break the encryption on that.
I don't even think it's encrypted. Well, it's probably just weird
the recovery
file
slash, yeah. It's
just the base, yeah.
But that,
just
the
formatting
on
the disk, probably.
The
why would you do that? Why would you have, just to be different? Why would you have a custom computer with a custom file system or whatever?
Because you're Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah, but
because of Vulcan.
He had a whole alternate universe.
He may have been paranoid enough that he wanted it where if you took those floppies, if you got a hold of them, that you couldn't just put them in another computer and
maybe
read them.
I don't know.
What else were you going to do with a computer from that age? Oh, I'll write my own operating system, and I'll just do my own file system. It'll be fine.
I didn't think Gene Roddenberry was technical in that kind of way. I mean, I know the guy is a former airline pilot, and he's a smart fellow, but I didn't really think he was all that, you know, computery.
I would bet that it's somebody did it for him, set it up for him. It may have been something that he wanted or that they offered him.
Had Leonard Nimoy do it. Come on, Nimoy, code me up this operating system. It's like, you know I'm not actually Spock, right?
Live long and format the disks using this special system I just made.
I bet he knew Ernie.
Damn it, Jim, it's a bad story, not technological secrets.
No, I bet he knew Ernie, and Ernie found a Word typewriter in a trash can and hooked it up to a hard drive.
Here's what it is. It turns out it was a pre-release version of Warp. It was OS.
Ooh, had to go there, didn't
you? Well, they said it was like a custom version of, you know, custom OS, but that, there were a lot of small homebrew competing OSs around that time.
What was the competitor to DOS? There was another DOS.
Well, there was CPM.
There was DR-DOS.
DR-DOS.
OS2.
Digital Research DOS.
Yes.
Where the commands were almost the same, except it used like MS-DOS.sys and maybe... Which was the MS-DOS.sys and IO.sys were the two system files in DOS.
Right.
And what did DR-DOS use, like IBM.BIOS or something there? I know there were two other files that had to be at the front of the floppy disk for DR-DOS to boot. Wow, this is taking me back. This is like
it's a little known fact that on Roddenberry's computer, to start it up, you had to pick up the mouse and say into it, "Computer."
Hello, computer.
There's a reference to Star Trek 4.
Correct.
Yes, transparent aluminum.
The keyboard. How quaint.
Which actually, apparently there is some sort of transparent metal has been finally invented and exists.
I would buy some. That would be cool.
I just wonder how expensive it is. But anyway,
probably
there's
very,
that.
Very expensive.
Oh, I worked for a company that actually owned DR-DOS for a while.
And yet, it must be really expensive because it hasn't even been rumored to be used as like a screen technology for an iPhone yet.
Well, they do all kinds of stuff with that. There was that Sapphire manufacturing kerfuffle from last year or 2 years ago where it was like Apple bought like a Sapphire manufacturing company, or a Sapphire manufacturing company was... said that
they invested heavily in Sapphire Technologies,
yeah,
or
and
whatever.
Then it was like, oh nope, never mind, that didn't work. Cancel. Gorilla Glass
Apple,
forever.
I think Apple took the building and part of the settlement took the building and turned it into a data center or something. Jeez. Or is going to.
Aluminum oxynitride is the transparent aluminum. The issue is it's only 80% transparent right now.
Lame.
So they're not quite there, but
that's
they're getting
dumb.
Close.
I don't want it. Forget it. Toilet flush sound.
They should call it computer secure transparent aluminum, because it's not really 100% secure.
It's just privacy glass.
Dumb aluminum.
So, I guess speaking of iPhone rumors.
Speaking of iPhone rumors.
There will be no rumors. Rumor quashed.
Oh. I hear
oh,
that.
Oh, I see what he's trying
just
to
barely
do.
Hear
very
it.
Quiet, though.
That was too quiet. Just sing it yourself, Pete. Just make
wow.
the sound.
Wow. So what? Is it potted too far down?
We thought we lost you.
The volume's up pretty far.
We thought you vanished into the ether again.
Should I play it again? Let's try it.
There you go. Move the mic closer.
Yeah. High tech.
It's very quiet.
Yeah, still super.
It's still very quiet.
Super quiet.
It wasn't quite as quiet.
Is it quieter than my voice is?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Way quieter.
I wonder what the deal is, because that's basically I cranked up the volume on the machine.
Why can't we have Flicted play the problem?
Yeah, it's like how real radio stations do it. Oh, wait. Yeah. I know why.
Oh.
Why?
Well, it's supposed to feed through the same place where... it's supposed to feed through the same way my audio does, and so it shouldn't be any different, but
let me see what happens when I hit this button. No, no, that's HD3.
Still. So, anyways, on the Apple front, I guess maybe for the other segments, if somebody wants to get their speaker ready and drag the,
we're ready. I mean, do you want the bumper? Because I mean, we can give you.
If you guys couldn't hear it, if it didn't go out loud enough,
we heard it.
Sure, we're good.
Let's move on.
We heard it twice.
Can do it again.
Let's play it a couple more times and see if we can get it loud, really loud.
If we play it a couple more times, then we'll be able to go to outro.
Or we could go look for more J. Lee domains.
Ooh.
That'd be fun.
JLee.domain.
There you go.
Bumper.horse.
JLee.
La la la. So, and already the bumper and discussion of it is probably longer than the segment.
What about JLee.papasmurf?
PapaSmurf.jlee.ketchup.
Oh,
there it is. It wasn't me. It was not me, Jay.
Anyways, now there's only one article with that Apple rumor and sort of a roundup.
He's already dead.
The thing that's interesting, that this one, the iPhone rumor du jour, is it sounds like we're getting very close to that. It's getting very close to verified that there won't be a headphone jack in the iPhone 7. That they'll do an all-in-one Lightning connector for both connectivity and audio output.
Dang, I was about to think, man, that'll be awesome, because then everybody will just be listening to them like with the volume turned up on the speaker.
No.
That's so awesome.
Adding fuel to the rumor, there's a couple Chinese websites. I guess Anshuo.cn and Weifeng cite supply chain news from unnamed sources that reportedly confirm that it's true. Both websites claim the iPhone 7 will not have a headphone jack. Let's see, anything else? There's also speculation that Apple could introduce wireless charging on the iPhone 7. And that's about all the Apple rumors for this week. They haven't found any other new crazy ones. So that's that.
All right. Well, there's the sound that tells us we need to take a short break. It's nice and loud.
There we go.
All right. You've been listening to Technology Bites. We're going to take a short break. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Yeah, yeah.
KPFT is supported in part by Emporium Presents. Emporium Presents hosts on January 7th at the Cullen Performance Hall at University of Houston bluegrass singer-songwriters Dave Rawlings Machine. For tickets and information about Dave Rawlings Machine in concert January 7th, you can visit Ticketmaster.com or the TDECU Stadium Ticket Office.
Your tax-deductible car donation helps make great radio. When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Proceeds from your vehicle donation benefit KPFT. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. Our car donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and an optimal charitable tax deduction. Call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org. Thank you. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Now back to...
Barrett time.
No Barrett time today.
No Barrett time.
I'm sorry. I think I left
it. I didn't even bother asking.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even have it ready to play.
I wasn't really.
I didn't even think about
Let's
it.
Let's just have a new segment called Sad Trombone. Now it's time for Sad Trombone.
Is there a Barrett time?
Is there a Barrett excuse for no Barrett time?
No, he doesn't even bother making up excuses. And he can't be bothered to
He left it in the Uber.
I think that's where it was. Yeah. Yep. I grabbed my phone.
You left
Barrett
it
time.
In Uber.
If I can't ride my motorcycle to the radio station, I'm going to pretend that I was going to write one.
Left the gun, took the cannoli.
He's off to a bird sanctuary. Going to stand his ground.
Well, there's tons of... it is CES time, even though, you know, since the CES...
The Consumer Electronics Show.
The enormous show in Vegas.
That was so... That show was so big when I went there, like, 6 or 7 years ago or more.
It's enormous.
It was too big. I hated it. It was
yep.
so big.
I hate it too. That's why I'm not there. That's why I am not there today. Although my coworkers are there.
Although they're going to have, there might be some actual cool things there.
There's always amazing cool
Hold
things
on. Are there going to be new TVs there?
There might be
big screen TVs are coming down in price.
Yeah, if you got your 4K cool TV, I'm
Throw
sure they will announce one that will embarrass and humiliate you because
Throw
it's
out.
So much better this
Projection
week.
4K.
I don't know.
Yeah, so... yeah.
Have Netflix.
K stands for crap.
The thing... Well, so I guess... So I've got a bunch of CES stuff under Try, Buy, or Fry, and I'm going to try CES. playing the bumper a different way, and we'll see if you guys even hear it at all.
Okay.
Nothing.
Not hearing anything?
Nope.
No, nothing.
Okay. Then let's try it the other way.
Let's try, buy, or fry it this way.
Dun-dun-dun.
Nope.
Nope. Super quiet.
It's real low.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
What's wrong? Wapner. I mean...
Wapner.
What changed between...
Last week and this week?
Yeah.
56K up from 33.6.
Yeah. He's running a shotgun.
No, I... This time for the audio, I don't know if you can tell if there's any difference in the quality of it on your end that you can hear, but this time I tried, instead of using Google Hangouts, I'm tried FaceTime.
Oh,
and I just wonder if Apple basically has made it where FaceTime takes over the audio output, and so anything else just gets, you know, second.
You do sound a little bit, it's not as loud.
Yeah, your mic don't have as much presence.
Yes.
As you've
It's had, the FaceTime.
I think we need to go back to the other way next week.
Yeah,
I
that sounded, was a lot louder and clearer.
Better. I thought he sounds better this time.
Previously, you sounded like you were here with us. Now, you sound like you're muffled a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe I should be potted up a little farther.
Nothing.
All right, well, at any rate,
So, Snark Tank,
Don't die, man.
Choke Tank. Potted
him up too much.
Now you get to...
too much pot.
Fortunately, you can hear that.
That,
you
know, that was all the way. It doesn't go to 11.
Every hack and cough...
If it's not meant to go out over the airwaves, it will.
Yeah. So, the interesting thing, so Try By and Fry is where all the kind of new stuff is, and so a lot of the CES stuff, that's where I figured it belonged in the show. The thing that's kind of different that you didn't see that much in past CES shows that you do see now is
the car cars.
The car companies are there in force.
Yeah, this is definitely a huge auto year at CES.
BMW showed off their new i8 Spider concept, which the i8 is their electric or their hybrid electric car. And this thing looks like something out of a movie. It's kind of future stuff. It's full of tech that we won't even get to have yet. Basically, so it's sort of showing the future direction of what BMW wants to do. The centerpiece of the car is a 21-inch display that stretches over much of the passenger side of the dashboard. They say that may seem like an odd place for the driver to interact with, but the car is also the centerpiece for AirTouch, a new gesture control system that lets the driver choose menu items on the display just by pointing at them. Hey, so you can get that kind of pop your collar and point at the air conditioner or the stereo. And to select, the driver either physically pushes forward in space or touches a selection button on the steering wheel. So it's unclear whether this kind of system would really be less distracting in practice than, say, a traditional touch screen. But right now apparently they call it the iVision future interaction concept. Is also highly automated on command, putting it on a par with a system like Tesla's Autopilot. When set to auto mode using the switch next to the steering wheel, the car can manage highway driving all on its own. The steering wheel changes color and moves forward to give the driver more room, and the seat takes on a lounge profile. I could deal with a lounge profile to drive back and forth to Houston to make it easier to kick back and interact with the giant display. If you go to the stuff is up, the article links are up at geekradio.com, right up on the front page, right beneath the Geek Gathering announcement for this coming Friday. And there's pictures in it. But it does the Spider concept. Unlike a lot of concept cars, this one actually looks like something out of a sci-fi movie. So kudos for that one. And then another one that's a little bit more practical and looks a little less sci-fi, but except in how it works. Another one from BMW is they have a concept motorcycle helmet with a heads-up display, which is one of those kind of, you almost sort of wonder why there hasn't been somebody with a really good one of those a long time ago.
Somebody kickstarted one that looked pretty decent.
How much would you want in your eyepiece display, you guys that ride regularly? I mean, you want a attack and a speedo, anything else at all?
I've never had a vehicle with it, and so to me it seems like it might be distracting until
it'd
I
be nice.
To it.
I don't know about the Tacoma. Yeah, the TAC maybe they could probably put it, some of it is though with the heads up, is it could be smaller and down in the corner because you really just need to, just like in a car or any of that, you just need to, out of the corner of your eye, be able to see if you're kind of red line, getting to the red line.
The Kickstart one actually had a camera in the top back of the helmet, so you could actually see behind you without turning your head.
Yeah, there are about five, I guess they're calling them smart helmets now. There are four or five out there, and one of the cooler things, I think, is any kind of navigational aids, because, Pete's right, Flick's right, my TAC on to my bikes, they flash, they do other things. You don't need it in your face. You don't need to be watching it. But being able to see what's behind you instead of having to do head checks, see if you've got a car fast approaching when you're at a red light, if you need to hop over a lane or something like that, that would be really neat.
Oh, yeah. So, it isn't totally a novel concept. They mentioned in the article that a startup named Scully makes an augmented reality helmet. The BMW one has a forward-facing action cam that can record your ride GoPro style and a rear-facing camera that can be used as a virtual rearview mirror in the heads-up display, which would be very good because, at least one of the things to me that when I don't ride much anymore, but I used to a lot, was when you were riding, the vibration of the bike makes the rearview mirror vibrate, and that can make it where you don't see as well, or if it's raining, stuff like that, you can't see you don't get a good idea of what's behind you like you could with a heads up type thing. The other thing I wonder why nobody has done is why they haven't looked at some of the sensors that they're using for it. May be that it just takes too much hardware, but the kind of lane, the blind spot sensors.
Yeah.
And some of that would be nice if there was something that was showing you that there's somebody like right there in the, you know, in that spot near you or coming up on it.
Yeah, there's a helmet. There are a couple of them. I don't know if this one's come out, but there's one made by NAND Logic that does like collision warnings and things like that. So if it's that thinks you're going to hit something, it'll start to, you know, give you some visual aids up in the
look
helmet.
Out.
You know, the, I guess the thing about it, the positive side about BMW showing a concept with it is that, and they say that it will be a real product within the next few years. When somebody like BMW or Honda or some of those in the motorcycle business does something, then that brings in a lot more than a Kickstarter, you know, sideline type company. But, cause the one that you can buy right now is like $1,500. I don't know how much the BMW one would end up being either, but, you know, so there's that, and that's kind of new, and it's innovative and new, and so another one to keep an eye on. Plus you can like really weird people out when you ride in your Uber ride and you wear your heads up display.
I'm gonna get an Oculus Rift and drive around in my car and pretend I'm on a motorcycle.
Someone did that, and it wasn't on a motorcycle, it was in a car, and more or less
I was gonna be
was
in a car, but I was gonna have it simulating a motorcycle ride.
While you're riding that way, you can put on the Tesla suit. I found this one on Uncrate. It is a Kickstarter. It's a modern virtual reality system that does, you know, most the stuff that we've talked about and seen so far.
We'd all look
is
good in
sight,
these, huh?
sight and sound with ever more realistic environments. The Tesla suit promises to do the same for your sense of touch. You know, when I saw it was Tesla suit, I thought maybe you could be like some kind of, you know, electronic X-Man where you can like send off sparks and stuff, but apparently not. Using an electro-tactile haptic feedback system embedded inside clothing, it can let you touch and feel objects inside virtual worlds. It connects to your rig via Bluetooth 4.0, and depending on which model you choose, you get either 16 or 52 feedback channels that can draw you into the experience like never before.
I think
it's upgradable thanks to a modular design, and even includes climate control so you can feel the heat or chill of the world you're exploring.
Yeah, I think with us, you know, if we wore the suit, somebody would press our haptic feedback belly and we would go, hoo-hoo.
Yeah. Yeah, the outfit, the Tesla suit looks like a concept reject from the Lost in Space movie about 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
I'm looking at their Kickstarter, and I gotta say, it is if you actually want to kickstart one of these things, it's a little pricey.
But think about it, you could buy this suit and be a superhero. You could be Feels Man. I got the feels, all the feels, virtual feels.
Honestly, this suit looks like the suits from Dune that you would, you know.
Still suits?
Still suits, yeah. They would recoup valuable moisture from your body.
And maybe these do that.
Drink it through a tube again. Possibly. Yes, I bet if you, it somehow, wouldn't go anywhere.
I'm thinking liquids and haptic feedback systems running on electricity are probably not a great match. I have a feeling you'd get some real haptic feedback.
Yeah, don't lose your precious bodily fluids.
My precious bodily fluids.
Yes, follow the how I learned to stop wearing it. Anyways, into more normal stuff, I guess, or more typical CES stuff. This one is not cheap, but in the future, it could go down more. A company, device manufacturer Akishio, unveiled what they call it, the Thunder 3 Duo Pro. What it is a hardware RAID and a display dock for Thunderbolt 3 technology. So this is like stuff that I don't know is really out yet for most people, but it'll be coming. The Thunder 3 Duo Pro can deliver transfer speeds of up to 770 megabytes per second, while simultaneously, so at the same time, providing two 4K video streams to connected displays. So it's roughly 8 times faster than USB 3.1 Gen 1 and 4 times faster than USB 3.1 Gen 2. So it's not one of these, oh, it's practically the same as USB. No, As sold, the two-bay enclosure is unpopulated and supports RAID 0 striping, RAID 1 mirroring, span, and non-RAID. So it's got basically, if you have Thunderbolt on your computer, you can hook it up, and it's got two Thunderbolt 3 ports, a USB 3.1 Gen 1 port, and a DisplayPort video output to connect the latest 4K 60 Hertz displays. The second Thunderbolt 3 port on the Thunder 3 Duo Pro operates the same as a Thunderbolt 3 computer port by supporting up to 5 daisy chained Thunderbolt 3 USB 3.1 or DisplayPort devices. So it's about $400, which ain't cheap, but if you're doing video or you're doing some stuff where you've got serious data and you're running two 4K monitors, that might be something you might try or buy. I don't know. I guess none of us are to that yet. Because we haven't won the lottery to want two 4K screens. Here's one that I want to see tried. I don't know if I'd get to try it, but I'd like to see it tried. Airbus has rolled out an anti-drone system. Apparently, it will zap drones. It's from Airbus Defense and Space, so not just the airline people. The Airbus anti-drone system employs infrared cameras, radar technology, and sensors to spot and track drones over 6 miles away. So if you know you're worried about them coming in your yard, you can nail them from when they take off. If the incoming drone is considered suspicious, the system can use electronic signals to jam the drone's communications and more. It allows very effective and specific jamming and therefore a takeover of the UAV, according to the company. The Airbus system follows a recent Layer 8 post that detailed the U.S. FBI's Federal Bureau of Prisons looking for something like it as a system to protect federal prison guards and prisoners from incoming threatening drones. Because, yeah, you know that there's already been – there's got to have already been a bunch of people who've thought, hey.
Like a drone delivering a cake with a file inside of it.
From Amazon Prime. Just
buzzing over the workout yard, dropping cakes for everyone to escape with.
Mm, well, cake. Or just, yeah, dropping any kind of contraband seems like, and with the camera, with a camera on the drone or whatever, you could see that you were actually dropping it to, the person you intended it to go to or if they were there kind of thing. But so now we get into a drone, anti-drone war going on in the air above our heads. And so, like I said, I'd love to see that one tried maybe particularly aggressive neighborhood associations could also pony up for it and not let anybody in the neighborhood have drones.
I would assume that's got to be pretty expensive, but I would also think it's not going to be too long before, some group of security researchers gets together and puts together, just kind of an end-all be-all kit with some software-defined radio that could come in and, like, hey, here's the code for the Parrot stuff, here's the code for this brand, here's the code for this brand.
Oh, but see, I heard that they've secured that by using SSL certs,
SHA-1,
and MD5 and SHA-1. Well, and if the BMW Spider concept, knowing that it's probably going to cost similar amounts of money to a small home, there's one that probably will be a better price, and the specs are interesting, and also sort of harkens, it's futuristic while harkening back to the 60s. Volkswagen officially unveiled its new kind of microbus, although it's pretty small. I guess it's more of a micro mini bus. It's called the Budd-E, BUDD-E, and it's got a vague resemblance. It looks like sort of a car-sized version of a really cool VW bus.
And they got Pauly Shore as their spokesman.
Yeah, I know. Oh,
did they really? Please tell me they didn't do that.
No.
That would kill it, and I want to see this thing do well.
The sad thing is, and the thing that made me think particularly of Pauly Shore with it, is that the vehicle, the impressive command center, can be controlled with either voice, touch, or gesture controls, saying, "Hello, buddy," activates the vehicle's voice control system that recognizes natural language commands like "turn up the heat a bit, please." And one thing with the system that's not as dumb as the name is apparently it can recognize which occupant is giving the commands and react accordingly, so that if somebody in the left rear seat says it's too hot in here, the system can lower the temperature in that passenger's zone.
Or eject that passenger.
Yes. No, I think probably it'll just play Pauly Shore stuff until they bail out of the car on their own.
I would maybe get this in the back. It's got like a wraparound kind of lounge thing with it looks like a monitor on one of the windows. Check this out.
You wonder, the thing about it is, so there's the concept. You wonder how much is it. They always show these concepts with really cool seating arrangements, and then when the thing comes out, it's like a bench seat, or it's two rows of bench seats, or you know, it's plain old stuff. One of the things that's sort of surprising and impressive is it's supposed to have a 373-mile electric range. And know that, you know, you could go a pretty long ways on a single charge with that. The announcement says, quote, "Buddy is a mobile interface which connects the vehicle with the world around it." That's got the kind of old style CES, arrogance or super naive future vision that we've all come to miss because it's been too consumery and not enough sci-fi before. VW says the change in their interior, they say that it rethinks the human-machine interface, and VW likens it to the change from flip phones to smartphones or from analog timepieces to smartwatches. I don't know if they want to do that one until the smartwatch is really a little better established, because right now, that could be a real 50-50 proposition for people, whether they prefer an analog timepiece or a smartwatch.
Did they say that the buddy gets 373 miles on an electric charge, just like their diesel engines get 60 miles to the gallon with low emissions?
Well, on the plus side, I don't know how you there's no emissions from the electric vehicle at all, unless they like built something that actually produced. Or maybe the secret is there's a hidden diesel engine in the car with no emissions on it that's powering a generator to give you the extra 300 miles. It's really only got a 73-mile range with a 300-mile diesel tank on it.
Now,
it
says there's no AI. It's actually Pauly Shore.
He actually is there, buddy.
They learned to clone Pauly Shore.
Unlock this chain.
It connects to him. It connects to him via a network of flip phones. It says it has 101 kilowatt-hour flat battery pack underneath it. So it sounds like the battery pack like runs through a large amount of the length of the. Of the device. So there's a command center thing, and thing they're talking about is more kind of Internet of Things stuff to just get super trendy. Apparently, with Buddy, passengers will be able to access their homes and workplaces to perform perform tasks such as controlling the air conditioning, turning lights on or off, or simply looking to see if the kids are home yet. VW estimates that in the future, Buddy owners won't even have to turn on their lights in their house, for instance, as the car will automatically command the smart home to do it as it approaches. Of course, we'll all be living in our Buddies by that time.
And the Buddies will also talk to Furbies.
and Sims. That's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to connectivity, however. With the link between Buddy and a smart home, a front door camera could snap a picture of someone ringing your doorbell and send the image to the screen in the car's dashboard. I think that we're getting very close to where we need to retire the concept where that's like the cool, awesome thing you can do with technology anymore.
Yeah, that pretty much can already be done. I mean, maybe not to the car dash because the car companies haven't enabled it, but you can definitely have streaming video of your front door sent to your cell phone.
So on the plus side, the Volkswagen concept looks pretty cool. And the stuff that they're wanting it to do sounds interesting. And if it was self-driving, then, you know, there's plenty of room to go sit in the back and watch a big screen or something. The Volkswagen one is a concept. There's not a full story on it, but the Chevy Bolt, which is the, not to be confused with the Chevy Volt, which you would think was the electric car. The Chevy Bolt is a car that will be under $30,000, include, you know, after you take the government credit for an electric car, the tax credit, under $30,000, and it has an over 200-mile range. So there, it looks like Chevy may actually beat Tesla to market with their kind of affordable by more normal consumers electric cars. And Oculus Rift is going on sale for $599. Ouch. Apparently the shipping dates, you know, they had pre-orders, and within 15 minutes of pre-orders going up, online orders were being told to expect a ship date of April. And after an hour, the expected ship date was pushed back to May. So there are either
of 2018.
So many. there are either initially limited supplies, or else sales have been a lot higher than they expected. For that price, for that $700, you'll get the headset, a head tracking camera, an Xbox One controller, the media-focused Oculus remote, connection cables, a carrying case, and two included games: Space Shooter Eve Valkyrie,
Asteroids, and
Pac-Man, Pac-Man
tanks,
VR,
Battle tanks,
and Decathlon.
Ooh!
you'll get the entire Atari game collection. let's see, and so it has a space shooter called Eve Valkyrie and third-person platform game Lucky's Tale. It does not include tax, $30 in shipping, or the Oculus Touch hand tracking controllers, which were delayed to the second half of 2016. So, but apparently the people who pre-order the Rift will be first in line to pre-order the Touch controllers later in the year. Another thing that doesn't go with that price is the relatively powerful Windows PC that's required to use it. Oculus recommends a rig with an NVIDIA GTX 970 or equivalent, an Intel i5 processor, and at least 8 gigs of RAM, which, I don't know, that sounds like a pretty moderate, regular computer. I guess the NVIDIA might be a pretty high end.
It's a $300-ish video card, I think. And there are actually some more stipulations that are starting to come out. They have a compatibility checker tool that you can download and run. And it turns out that you need not just a motherboard that has USB 3, which would be, you know, basically any motherboard, but there are a very specific set of USB 3 chipsets that they support. And some motherboards that are more than a year or two old that may have USB 3 chipsets from VIA or from some other manufacturers are not going to be compatible with the thing. So it can, unless you are like already someone who has like a really good gaming computer and you kind of stay on top of parting stuff together and you're swapping stuff out regularly, buying an Oculus Rift isn't just like a $600, you know, thing. You get into this hardware treadmill where it's like, well, I actually need to get a new motherboard, and that means I need to get a different CPU, and I need new RAM for the new motherboard, and might as well upgrade my video card. And sooner or later, you're not in for $600, you're in for $1,600.
Yeah, which probably, if you calculate it that way, then you probably won't be A, disappointed, or B, be shocked by going over budget.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's basically in May, Oculus CEO said the Rift would cost about $1,500 if you were starting from scratch and pairing it with a suitable PC. So it's stayed in line with that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, and that still holds true.
So virtual reality, again, stays expensive and disconnected from regular. I guess I'll take the free regular reality approach for a little while longer.
I mean, the graphics are great in regular reality, but there are some severe bugs. Like, there's something broken with respawning. Once you die, you seem to, like, not respawn anymore.
True, but you don't have to wear the, like, Tesla suit and the headgear thing and risk nausea a lot less frequent.
You could, though. It makes for, like, a nice mini game.
And then a final one this is either clever and interesting or else nobody's going to buy it at all. You know, how many people if you have this one is particularly tied to pairing with the Retina MacBook. It's a USB-C product, so it's only the ones that have that connector where this would work. Asus either has had a visionary approach to a new market or else is just crazy. They've come out with an external portable second screen for your laptop that you can bring along. So I know there are people who like, and I'm one of them, who likes multiple screens on your desktop. Well, now you can bring a 15.6-inch 1080p resolution monitor that hooks up by a single cable to any, you know, USB-C machine like a Retina MacBook, and bring it along with you. According to Engadget, the display panel, the new model, they used to have – this is a successor to a USB-powered one that they had 2 years ago. The display panel in the new model has been upgraded to IPS for improved color and viewing angles. With the single USB-C cable, a Retina MacBook can power the display without the need for a second power cord. And it is thin. It's 8.5 millimeters thick and weighs approximately 1.8 pounds. So it's not like carrying a full-on second monitor with you. And it's going to retail between $200 and $300. But, you know, so if you've ever been on the airplane and missed having multiple screens, then this could be the product for you.
Shouldn't we be trying buying or frying these things as we go along here?
I figured people would speak up if they had a strong either objection
go ahead,
or
Lee.
No, I wouldn't buy this. It's not my jams, man. Not my jams. I need a portable 15-inch display. I have one of those that is called a laptop.
Yeah, but this would be in addition to your laptop. So
yeah,
you could have
if
both.
I need a bigger display in addition to my laptop, I'm at my desk where I have three 30-inch monitors.
Like I said, it's either visionary or – I guess the thing I could see for this would be because I've experienced a version of it where there was a period of time where I would travel to an office for a big chunk of the week every week, and having this to bring along where you could bring it along and have multiple monitors from your laptop when you're remote wouldn't be terrible. But, you know, again, for $200 or $300, you know, if you're going to a place that regularly, of course, for $100, you could buy a 1080p monitor that powers itself and that can just sit there while you're not there.
True,
you know, it's a lot
sir.
Cheaper to just buy a 20-inch instead of a 15 and just leave it there. But, you know, with the portability thing, there's some niftiness to it, but I just don't know that there's very many people who there's a use case for it.
This is sort of a bit of a tangent, but we were talking about the Oculus Rift, and then we mentioned Atari games, and then you mentioned the game with Oculus Rift was – well, one of them was E-Valkyrie, which made me think of the Atari game E.T., which made me think of the documentary about the Atari game E.T. So have any of y'all seen the documentary?
One about the
landfill?
About the landfill and like just the history of the game and what happened. Is it good?
I know it was on like Netflix.
It's on Netflix. I just haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I thought it was – I followed a lot of the story and was like involved with it before, so it's kind of cool. It delves into a lot of the search and a lot of just the guy who really thought it was out there and how no one believed him and just everything that went into moving that much Earth. So it's worthwhile.
Okay.
I would watch
it. It's in my queue, but I just had thought of it, and I thought some of y'all might have seen it.
Spoil it for me. Did they find him?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, Atari had said that it was just the cases, that it was empty cases, and that the game wasn't there. But then when they dug it up, they found actual cartridges of the game.
And it wasn't just E.T. They found other ones, too.
There was a big dump. It was a lot of titles.
There were. I mean, the legend.
It was
the legend that they essentially
title for
took,
the biggest dump.
Whoa. The urban legend was that they essentially took X million of unsold E.T. cartridges and flat buried them and then concreted it over. And that's not
because
what
the game
ended
was quote unquote so bad. There were a lot of things
they
playing
worried
into the
it was
whole.
Gonna
it was a very bad game.
It well was they the
but
issue
they,
was that
they
over
it.
They overproduced for the holidays, Christmas of 1980. I don't know, 4, 5, or 6, one of those, whenever E.T. came out, Christmas of 84, I think. Maybe Christmas of 83. I don't know. I wasn't
Disney laughs
too young
at your overproduction.
83.
In any case, yeah.
83.
83. Christmas of 83. So they overproduced the game, and then they had to get rid of them.
And they also rushed it, so it wasn't really...
Yeah, oh yeah, it was like
the game wasn't really
one dude,
finished.
One dude wrote it in like 2 weeks, and it... I mean, it wasn't... It's not like... When you take it on its own merits, it's not that bad of a little video. I used to play it all the time.
Maybe you had to have the book for it to make sense.
No, no, it really just doesn't make sense.
Because all I remember is there was like this, you know, 8-bit E.T. and his neck would go up and
down. You
know,
listen,
that's about
honestly,
all I remember.
It wasn't any more or less nonsensical than any other Atari game. It was basically, I mean, like Yar's Revenge, what was that even about? And this was, you know, at least you knew that like your little dude was E.T. as opposed to...
There were
you
good
know,
Atari 2600 games. Pitfall's really good.
Yeah, Pitfall's exceptional.
Barnstormer, Chicken Run. Of course, those are all Activision. But...
River Raid. Again, Activision. Yeah.
Pitfall.
Well, I mean, Activision was, you know, it was a bunch of Atari programmers who were upset at Atari's policy of not giving them credit for their work, so they broke away and formed their own Splinter Studio. Ironic, considering the monster that Activision has turned into and how Atari died. So...
Sad trombone.
That tangent.
So I guess they got the last word on that one.
Yes, sort of.
Man, they really bad timed it.
The ground, now that dump hole in the ground is known as the Atari Game Museum.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was kind of coming back to. So it wasn't just, you know, E.T. games. It was several titles that Atari had excess inventory of, and they didn't, like, bury it and then concrete it over. They buried it... along with packaging and a bunch of other stuff,
so why
and
did,
just general
why did,
trash.
Why did they ditch it? Like, they just said, we're never going to sell it, or was
the
there some reason?
Go ahead.
Well, no. So, I can let you go. It wasn't like they went out to the middle of the desert and say, here, we're going to go dig this. It's that they sent it to a landfill that was already out there, and half the reason they did it is they knew, you know, it's just like, you know, if you threw your trash out, it's not like you went to the middle of the desert to go bury, you know, like your software that you're totally ashamed of. You just put it on your front stoop, and the trash guy came and picked it up. So that's kind of what the search was more about, trying to, like, locate where it would have been dumped at the time, where that exists now, matching up to maps and stuff like that.
Yeah, and as to why they did it in the first place, economically, it was more cost-effective to, instead
like,
of warehousing
warehouse
and inventorying
space.
It, to just ship it out, get it off, strike it off the books, take a write-down, and, like, destroy it.
Yeah, but they weren't recycling back then.
No.
70s, 80s, not so much.
Didn't really care.
So did they do any kind of counts on, like, the number of what
games
were
there? No, and that's
kind
of the thing. Like, you would think... Because this urban legend has persisted for years, and you'd think this would be relatively easy to corroborate, right? I mean, surely there would be like a record, like somebody wrote this down somewhere, like, you know, like November or March 1984.
Struck 4 million ET cartridges off.
Yes, out of warehouses, XXX, whatever, loaded onto trucks. But, like, there hasn't really been a lot of, because of Atari's bankruptcy and collapse and all the different companies that Atari's assets have been floated out to over the past, I mean, 3 decades at this point, any kind of, like, real records about what happened have been very difficult to come by. So you end up with people trying to corroborate it through word of mouth. Old newspaper stories were a big one. And eventually, just recently, they figured out where and went and found them.
Yeah, there's also a lot of special circumstances. I didn't know this until just a handful of months ago. There's actually, it's called the North American Video Game Crash of 1983.
Mm-hmm. This
like,
is a big
it was
deal.
It was pretty bad. Like, a lot of companies almost went out. So, I mean, it really was, you know, cheaper just to get rid of stuff. People weren't making sane decisions necessarily
which,
at the time.
Which company was it that made the, like, the Chrome Atari 2600 cartridges?
I don't know. Wouldn't have been Atari.
Namco, maybe, or something?
Did they? Now, hold on. Now I got to see.
Yeah, there was one called Galaxian or
Chrome Atari
Galactica
cartridges.
Or something with a G, I think. It wasn't Galaga, I don't think.
I'm not,
Galaxian?
Not seeing
maybe,
anything.
Maybe.
Galaxian had a
But I remember there was one arcades. Company that had at least one or two cartridges that were like Chrome.
Well, there were a few cartridges that were of a funky shape. Instead of being like the standard rectangle, they were a little like kind of like the Return of the Jedi cartridge was kind of like that.
Well, this one was, yeah, it wasn't just a regular shape like the 2600 or the Activision cartridges. It was chrome and it had like some ridges on it or something, like a, almost like a, I don't know, whatever, however you call them where you're from, like a roly-poly, pill bug, whatever you want to call it.
Doodlebugs.
Was it shaped like one of those face massagers from the Sears catalog? Chrome with some ridges.
Yeah,
I'm
Google image searching like Atari cartridge designs and stuff, and I'm not really seeing anything beyond the two
it's
that I remember.
It's a fantasy that Flicted has.
Yeah.
Was it an older teenager that told you that it was a game cartridge?
Is this a secret?
And then after you won the game, like an alien came and got you. And
that's what I heard. And you go and defeat the defeat Zur and the Kodan Armada.
No, what I'm referring to is actually was a reel. There was a reel that was a chrome cart, like a silver cartridge.
Sure. Yes, sure there was.
But I can't remember the name of the company.
Yeah, I'm not seeing. I never owned it. Anything here?
Yeah, see, I've been trying to sell my idea of a reboot for The Last Starfighter, which is where the guy does, where it's a VR game and he's really good at it and really likes it. And then when he goes to the real place, it sort of sucks and he doesn't like it as much as the game.
I was going to do one where I got kids to play my game, but instead of playing games, they're actually like fighting wars in space.
Spoiler alert.
We'll see how that goes.
Well, that one can't beat the one where they think they're doing futuristic stuff, but they're really assembling iPhones for people in the United States. It's a virtual reality that you're never going to have one of these for yourself.
Virtual certainty.
Well, you know, Netflix was mentioned on. Of course, we're past the binge watching time, but. I would throw out two shout outs for ones that are binge worthy, which is Jessica Jones, which has had a lot of buzz, which is a Marvel kind of Daredevil related.
I've been on the fence about that.
It takes a very different approach. It doesn't follow the standard superhero approach, and it doesn't go off into the like weird sort of campy thing when it's the like real daily lives of people with powers. It's kind of fits in like a heroes type slot next to kind of regular comic book type movies to me, or you know, episodes. I've been liking it.
It's a crossover with Daredevil, or at least a limited crossover, right?
I haven't seen. It's set in Hell's Kitchen in New York City at the same time as the Daredevil stuff, but I don't believe I've seen any of the characters from Daredevil, and I haven't really seen any overlap. So far, you know, the big thing is it's got David Tennant plays the bad guy, and he's actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
He's Dave the. Doctor yeah, who, whatever doctor, whatever number doctor, which I don't remember off the top of my head.
Just the doctor.
Yeah, but which number doctor is kind of important to those who are doctor fans. But 11, no, he's
11.
So he does pretty well. He does a good job in that. He's clearly having fun, and it is definitely not a Whovian type character. But the other one is not so sci-fi and all that. This one's just good, so. And it's on Netflix, so I'll recommend it. There's one called River with Stellan Skarsgård. It's a BBC. He plays a detective who basically hallucinates voices and dead people talking to him. And it's not played for laughs. It's a serious show. But it is – if you're interested in kind of a fascinating sort of drama – powerful. It's a 6-episode thing, so it's like 6 hours. Really exceptionally good TV. I would put it on a caliber. It's like some of the really good HBO stuff. It's not the same kind of content, but like The Sopranos and Six Feet Under and those kinds of shows that were innovative and took a different approach to things and had very high quality. I watched it and it was really something.
I just finished watching the first season of iZombie.
What's iZombie?
Which
that's the kind of campy girl meets zombie romance detective story.
I started watching the Android version. Are they similar?
I don't. you kind of said it, but not exactly.
I didn't watch it. I just saw it in the peripheral.
Only reason I actually put it on was because it's actually based on a comic book series that was done by a couple of guys. One of them is Mike Allred, who is an artist and cartoonist writer that I really love for all of his Mad Men stuff he did years ago and for on and off throughout the years. Anyway, they did it, I think, in 2010 through 2012 or something. But it's marginally based on that. So the premise basically is there's this girl that is a zombie, and of course she has to eat brains, but she actually eats in this reality. Zombies eat brains in order to keep themselves from decaying and becoming shambling brain dead zombies. But whenever they eat brains, they also like gain the memories of the person whose brains they're eating.
Okay.
So she accidentally becomes a zombie, and so she gets a job in the morgue because she was a doctor. So she flips to working in a morgue so she can have access to brains. But then she finds out that she gets these memories, and so she ends up working with – this is set in Seattle. She ends up working with a
detective,
a guy on homicide to solve the mysteries of these people who were murdered that end up in the morgue.
Eat their brains and tell us who killed them.
It sounds like
True Calling with zombies.
So she doesn't tell – of course, most people don't know she's a zombie. She doesn't want them to know that. So – the cop's like, how do you know this? And she's actually not her. It's actually the guy. He says she's a psychic. So the cop thinks she's a psychic. Anyway, it's actually a pretty good series. It's marginally based because that character wasn't the main character in the comic books, but in the comic books, it was way more campy. Her best friend was like a ghost from the 60s that didn't know she was dead. And she had a friend who was a were-terrier instead of a werewolf. And there was a group of hot vampire chicks that ran a paintball thing outside in the woods so they could like get guys to come out there to play paintball, and then they would like...
So eat their brains.
No, they would suck their blood because they're vampires. Anyway, all the rest of that stuff doesn't really exist in this one. It's pretty much just the zombie stuff.
They cut all the good stuff.
But it was good.
I didn't realize there were so many.
Come on, there's a whole other show right there.
there's also a knockoff, I think, called like it's iRobot Roomba. And spoiler alert: the floor gets vacuumed.
That's a clean show. That's very nice. I don't watch a lot of zombie things. I didn't know there were so many zombie shows out there. There's one I think called Z Nation, and I just saw like a 10 minute clip of it, but in it
the movie
no I think it's Citizen Z. I think is what it's called. It's a little bit campier, but in it they had George R. R. Martin come do a cameo, and he was a zombie they had pretty much duct taped a pen in his hand, and because he had so much muscle memory from signing autographs at book things, he just kind of kept doing that. And then there was talk like, well, I wonder if we could get him to finish like the last book, like if we just put the thing in front of him. And it was actually played by him. Like, he actually played himself as a zombie in this. So I just saw the clip. I've got no idea if the surrounding show is good, but the clip was pretty awesome.
Sadly, they spent their entire budget to get him to do that clip, and then it's like the Kickstarter where it's all just the
video.
The
entire first season's only 3 minutes of George R. R. Martin holding a pen.
Well, there's a lot of buzz.
Signing his name.
Not geeky or sciencey or anything, but there's a lot of buzz about the Netflix Making a Murderer.
Yeah, what is that? I thought, is that like a Build-A-Bear kit or what? Is it a how-to?
It's a documentary about a guy who went to jail. He was falsely imprisoned over, I think, a rape, and he was vindicated by DNA, but in the process, he was tied to a murder. So. I don't know the whole details on it, but there's a lot of buzz about it going around as being, you know, like a maddening thing to watch. It's just
it's sort of amazing because the lead time to make something like that, I would have guessed hearing about it that it was inspired by the success of Serial, the podcast.
It was. I think it was inspired by the success of Serial.
So the Serial Murder podcast? For that woefully
Serial, Serial is a podcast that takes and sort of in kind of pseudo real time goes through a murder or a serial killing thing. I've not listened to it, but there was a lot of buzz surrounding
actually, somebody
it. The second season is
talking
the,
to me
about Bergdahl.
Is about yeah. Bo Bergdahl. And, yeah. and so what they do, though, I think the thing
the true
is they
crime
put out,
podcast
they give you the information, though, in the order that it was kind of presented and discovered as it happened.
Oh, so kind of
so
unfolds,
that you're sort of
like
following
if
it unfolding. Okay.
Instead
yeah.
of having, like, you know, presented with, you know, kind of the solution and then backtrack. Yeah.
It's like a murder mystery kind of thing unfolding.
Well, I think one of the things at this point, just to bring this back on topic, I guess, a little bit, is that, you know, companies like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and things that where they're able to, you know, present original content, you know, so like you're seeing content on your streaming services where we were talking about streaming earlier. Streaming used to be primarily just stuff that you could catch on broadcast and repeated. Or, you
like
know,
iZombie, which evidently is on
broadcast.
CW.
Right.
And season two is in the middle of season two right now.
But then other shows like, you know, Narcos, which is on Netflix right now, is an original. There are The Making a Murderer, different kinds of programs that are being, you know, the companies like
The Ridiculous
Netflix.
Six.
Yeah.
Master of None.
They're making enough money now to where they can actually revive old shows and buy shows. So I know there's a lot of hopes for, you know, rightly or wrongly, that shows maybe like Firefly or shows that the major networks didn't feel like they had the niche audience to keep supporting, that these shows might come back, you know, with like the private makers like Hulu, like Netflix. They might invest in that. Because that's where a lot of those shows live on anyway. You know, Firefly, just to use an example, didn't have great runs when it was broadcast, but it's doing really, really well, you know, with people just, you know, binging it and watching it on the streaming services.
Speaking of shows and movies and stuff, has everybody seen Star Wars? Have you seen it yet, Lee?
I have not seen it.
Has it been spoiled for you?
It has been absolutely, totally spoiled for me.
Oh.
I saw it.
I know everything.
I saw it.
I know everything.
Oh so no! So you know about General Leia?
I know Jar Jar. I know about Darth Jar Jar. Yes, I know the big reveal at the end when he takes his helmet off and he's all like,
"Misa,
Misa, dark side now."
Do you care?
No, I don't care.
We can't. We might have listeners. We tell listeners to turn off.
Attention, listeners.
We're not going to say anything, but I'm just curious if you're still planning to go see it.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you know, at some point, I guess.
I ours will pull your geek creds, man. You've got to at least go fake that.
I just don't
buy
like,
a used ticket off eBay.
I just don't
so
like
So aren't
going
you
to...
a big Star Wars fan?
Yeah, you know, kind of. Yeah.
Well, if you haven't seen it, you can't.
I'm a big Star Wars fan, absolutely. I mean, you know, I had all kinds
Star
of
Trek
theories
guy.
About it and everything, but I just don't want to go. Yeah, just...
It didn't make you want to see it when you heard the George Lucas thing comparing selling it to Disney to selling his child to white slavers?
The child that he abused mercilessly for years and years.
It's more like Children Protective Services coming in and giving the kid, not selling the kid into, servitude or anything.
I mean, it wasn't much better, but it was better.
I also saw Hateful Eight.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Did you see it in 70mm?
Did you see it in 70mm with food brought
Did you go to Austin and see it with Tarantino?
No.
He showed up in Austin.
No, I didn't see the extra edition with an intermission and all that stuff. I just saw the regular version.
Is it any good?
It's a Tarantino film. If you like Tarantino, it's good.
They all get shot in the end.
People get shot and it's kind of violent, but there's a lot of good dialogue and it's an interesting story, you know, the way it's told.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't like going to theaters. It's so much better at my house.
Oh, this is one of those movies, unless you have, you know, like the 50,000-foot IMAX screen. I would say catch this in the theater with some visuals and with some sound.
Which are we talking about, Hateful Eight or Star Wars?
Star Wars. Hateful Eight, I'm assuming.
A non-spoiler pseudo, you know, maybe if you're really up for it, spoiler. Somebody wrote an article that kind of digressed into mentioning how often in the George Lucas Star Wars movies people got hands cut off, you know, arms cut off. Very frequently, and apparently people who asked George Lucas about it, he would just, you know, kind of, he would not really answer their question, but he would respond. And so the non-spoiler spoiler is, I don't think anybody gets their limb cut off in this first new Star Wars. So I guess that's the big, I don't know, is it an improvement or change that J.J. Abrams made?
Does nobody really get their arm cut off?
There was a time I thought it happened, or it was going to happen.
Is there a Wilhelm scream at least?
I'm sure.
I didn't catch it if it happened.
I don't remember, but it certainly might have been.
There's got to be a Wilhelm.
They also did not have a stormtrooper banging his head on a that I caught. Banging his head on a door.
Although
so
I was
that one.
I was banging my head on a door after the big letdown of Captain Phantasm.
Captain Phasma.
Phasma.
Yeah. That was
had the big chrome uniform that you'll be talking about in about 20 years, and nobody will know what it is because the character added up to nothing.
Well, that's the thing. She was pretty much the Boba Fett of this series. Like, oh yeah, everybody loved Boba Fett. He's so awesome, and he didn't really do much, and then he got killed in a stupid way. And that, I'm thinking that's what's going to happen with this one. Like, they built up, it's like, oh, this awesome character. And then I watched the movie, I'm like, wasn't even hardly in the movie, and didn't even do anything good except something stupid, kind of. And
they didn't even explain how she could afford to get her uniform chrome plated.
All right, there was a Wilhelm scream in the Force Awakens, according to the internet, which never lies. It was in the stolen TIE fighter scene.
Now that I think about it, yeah. Jeez, I should. Usually, it's one of those where once you start catching Wilhelm screams, it's pretty hard not to notice them when they happen, which irritates the heck out of my spouse when we watch movies. I'm like, "Hey, did you just hear that? That was the Wilhelm scream."
Shut up!
No, what?
No one cares about your dumb Wilhelm scream.
And then you, of course, tell them the whole story behind it.
What? Then you go on to recant. What do you remember? What that is, honey?
To tell the history, yeah.
Well, a long time ago, there was this man named Wilhelm.
Well, I was just driving through Houston, and
I think the original sound was from like a Western or something, and a guy gets shot with an arrow and lets out that
falls
scream.
Falls off a horse. Falls
off a horse.
Went to see a man about a horse?
He did. They took an arrow to the thigh and fell over dead. Screaming the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, that's from Skyrim.
There we go. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Internet.
Sad trombone.
Emoticon.
At the, I heard when that guy.
The emoji for sad trombone?
No, there should be a convention for people who like emoticons.
Emoticon.
New emoticon con.
2016.
See what you did there.
All right, well the Geek Gathering.
It's
our own emoticon.
Go ahead, get
Jay. Yeah, our con is coming up. It's the Friday Geek Gathering. We're going to do it a week later than we normally do because, you know, New Year's.
So that means it's this Friday.
It's this Friday.
So it's the first Friday after the first Saturday.
So you don't have to use your time machine.
It's the first Friday after the first Friday after the first Saturday before the second Saturday.
2808 Milam at Drew's, 7:30, 7 o'clock onwards.
Details at geekradio.com. Come on out. There's going to be fire.
It won't be cold at all.
There will be
fire.
Fire. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Darren.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groove House.
And we're gone.
Mahatma Gandhi, apostle of peace and nonviolence, demonstrated to the world the effectiveness of nonviolent means for bringing about profound social changes and lasting peace. In his spirit, the Mahatma Gandhi Library was founded in 2002 with the mission to increase public awareness, especially to the children of Gandhian philosophy and teachings, highlighting the universal values of peace, truth, nonviolence, and love. The library has an exhaustive list of books, artifacts, and an exhibition on wheels consisting of
authentic pictures depicting the life and times of Mahatma Gandhi. You can visit the library or find it online at gandhilibrary.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
There has never been a better time to donate your car to KPFT. When you contact the KPFT car donation hotline, you will do something great for this community. Call 1-855-573-8227 to donate or find out more information. KPFT is the only radio station of its kind located in Texas. It broadcasts music, news, information, and cultural programming from national distributors as well as locally produced offerings and more. Your donated vehicle goes to support this unique voice for yourself and others. Have an old car taking up space in your driveway? Donate it to KPFT now. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Your contribution is appreciated. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org.